evening. Welcome to the Solaire Report. Today is Thursday, November 30th, 2017. I'm Catherine Alston Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join us this evening. Well, it's that time of year we have Give the Gift of the Solaire Report. Each season, we invite every Solaire Report subscriber to give someone special a free gift subscription to the Solaire Report, and that's going to include all the 2017 annual wrap-up that starts and runs through January as well. That includes the annual equity overview, our great discussion with Joseph Farrell, News Trends and Stories. It's also going to include our the first quarter big reports, particularly Multipolar World, some of the others. Anyway, if you would like to gift this to the person of your choice, make sure to send the information to customerservice@solaire.com. If you go into the website, the instructions are all on the left under Give the Gift. We request that you get that to us by December 18th, or you can also call customer service at 866-311-2543. The PDF and flipbook on the third quarter wrap-up are going to be available next week. It's an outstanding overview of the control issues, and I find a lot of the misunderstandings and non-alignments between people result as not having a clear, coherent picture of how control works. And this is sort of a summary overview. Please take advantage of it. It's really, really good. And for those of you who have arranged hard copies, they'll probably mail out late next week or the following week. So you'll certainly have them by Christmas. We're going to publish tomorrow constitution.solaire.com. We decided to do a special Solaire report on Bill Binney's efforts to support litigation to hold NSA accountable. It's very important for people talking to Binney or any of his colleagues, Tom Drake, Kirk Wiebe, that if they need to visit the litigation, that they have all the documents and case summaries accessible. And so I wanted to pull those together in one place to support. And I've gotten so many requests for the different links related to enforce the Constitution, the missing money. We thought we would gather them and put them in one place. And I really think a lot of that is public material. So I hope you will circulate that. And then finally, we still have a few spaces open in our second group for the Solaire Circle is what Jason Bawden does that we're doing in the Australian Outback with Richard Dolan, Jason, and myself in May 2018. And what a great Christmas present. Somebody just came in the other day and said they were going to get one for them and their son. It's a great thing to take your spouse or one of your kids. It's just an amazing experience. Anyway, so there are a few open, so give the gift of an Australian Outback experience to somebody you love for Christmas. Anyway, the person who runs our customer service put a big Christmas bow around Eris Rock. It's up on the website, and you can link from there. There's a wonderful brochure. The brochure is worth reading even if you can't go. Download the brochure, take a look at the video. A lot of great information on the Uluru and the Australian Outback. Our theme tonight is Big Sky Country. I drove over to Amarillo in the Texas Panhandle last week to visit with a subscriber and her family. It was a beautiful Thanksgiving dinner with just an amazingly wonderful family. And the day after Thanksgiving, we then drove up into the northeast part of the Panhandle, and I got a real sort of drive-by education of the ranching world in the Panhandle. And also got a chance to see how the land is recovering from the fires that were happening in last spring. This really is Big Sky Country. It's just like the Great Plains when I drive across them up to Montana. I love the feeling of that incredible size and openness. Anyway, right after returning to Hickory Valley, I was informed that Boone Pickens has announced he's listing his 65,000-acre ranch. We drove by it. It's only $250 million. I can't imagine what the annual maintenance is. There are lots of pictures on the spread in the Wall Street Journal on the internet for those who like the panhandle as much as I do, but happen to have a couple extra billion dollars lying around. What happened after really just a gorgeous day, we drove back to Amarillo from the Panhandle. Amarillo's in the Panhandle, but from the North Panhandle. And there was this huge red and orange sunset. Absolutely beautiful. And the colors, there's a big, large cloud formation that took up almost the whole sky, and the red and orange sunset just spread its colors across this cloud. And it was, I have to say, it was unspeakably beautiful. And it reminded me, I've driven more than 500,000 miles across America over the last 15 years. And what I can tell you is that it's such a beautiful place. If you haven't gotten out on the road to see it, it's just really amazing. And if you haven't had the chance, I would get out and see it. And my Thanksgiving was a reminder that this country is still filled with wonderful people, still, and the world is. I spend my time trotting around the world, seeing beautiful people in beautiful places. Then they're everywhere. And it's exceptionally encouraged to spend time with them. For those of you who spent time with in Amarillo, thank you again. It was just an outstanding few days and well worth the long drive over and back. Money and markets. US dollar index down, now down 9% for the year. What that means is that commodities are going to start being a little bit more expensive. So get ready for the squeeze on the household budget that comes when the dollar is falling and importing commodities gets more expensive. Fixed income still holding in for the year. The long treasury at 7.25. The intermediate treasury at 2.37. The bond aggregate now just a little tad over 3%. And junk still holding its own at 6.16%. The S&P now up 20.25 for the year. Home builders up 30.2 for the year. The European ETF EGK up 25, tad more than 25%. Germany up 27, really 28%, and the developed markets minus North America up 23, almost 23.5. China large caps up 33.6. The Chinese small caps 31.25, and emerging markets coming in at 32.29. So, US at 20, Europe at 25, and China and the emerging markets at 30 plus. So that's how it looks like it's going to come in by the end of the year. It was interesting today when John McCain announced he was voting for tax reform. The Dow went up 300 points. How about that? That's pressure. That's called political pressure. The commodities doing a little bit better. The CRB is now down 1.74% for the year. Oil, of course, a little bit more, 3.16, which is way better than the doghouse it's been in. And then gold up 10.5% and silver up 2.65%. So gold significantly outperforming silver this year. Clearly, the story in the market is bull market and everything. I had to do, or I did coast to coast last night, just a news spot. Because one of the market commentators had said how unusual it was that you had a bull in everything, stocks, bonds, and precious metals. Only commodities is down this year and only by a little. Big question for me is the bottom end in commodities? Because if it is, that's where the opportunity is. Clearly not in everything else, which is remarkably high. After all the investment funds and the pension funds lock in their performance at 12/31, I think big question, and this was what the commentator was implying, it's time for a real correction. There's no doubt that the markets have been helped by the promise of tax reform. Let's see what the reality is. We'll talk about that in a minute. Big test of market depth. Siemens is planning on taking public most of its healthcare business, and it's estimated to be worth $47 billion. And that's the largest German IPO since 1996, and I think reflects the gain that Germany has made in terms of brand and image globally. Tax reform is the story that just keeps getting more and more complicated. The House has done their bill, the Senate did their bill. Now the Senate's working its way through amendments. It was working on amendments all day, and they're going to pick up apparently with the amendment process starting tomorrow at 11 a.m. The the chances of a tax bill happening this year got a big boost when McCain came out and said he was going to vote yes. Again, the Dow shot up 300 points on that announcement. But the Joint Committee on Taxation said the bill would not fully pay for itself via higher growth and would leave the government facing a revenue loss of around $1 trillion over 10 years. What that means is unless they make adjustments but pass it in this condition, then you run the chance of automatic cuts to Medicare and other things in the budget to deal with that kind of deficit. Then the Senate parliamentarian, and who's an independent official who polices compliance with legislative rules, said Republicans could not use a so-called trigger mechanism they wanted to deploy to reverse some tax cuts if revenues fall short. So that's going to make the amendment process even more complicated. We have a couple of Republican senators on the fence. One is Corker in Tennessee, concerned about deficits. Johnson in Wisconsin, concerned about small business. Collins in Maine, who doesn't want the property deduction eliminated. And then you've got Flake in Arizona, who I think is just looking to be a stinker, possibly following along Corker. Both Corker and Flake are not running again, and so are free to be a little bit more independent. My expectation is we're going to see a vote possibly tomorrow, probably early next week. I give it 70% chance of going through. It's still not a done deal, but needless to say, the Republicans very much want to get legislative victory here, especially after what happened with Obamacare. Now, one of the things that makes this complicated, they still need to do a short-term funding, or Congress still needs to do a short-term funding resolution, or otherwise you could get a shutdown of the government. So given that they need to do that short-term funding resolution, there's a lot to get done before they adjourn. The House is expected to adjourn on the 14th. I think the Senate should be that day or close. Now, I have a lot to say about tax reform, but I'd rather postpone the majority until we have a final bill. The last time I checked, it was over 500 pages, and I suspect the devil is really in the details on this one. So I'm going to want to really look at the detailed information. But there are a couple important points. I said some of them 2 weeks ago on my last Money in Markets, but I'm going to repeat some here. We've been watching a significant divergence between the percent of the GNP commanded by corporate revenues. So the corporations are taking up a greater and greater market share within the GNP, but the tax contribution is diminishing. So their percent of the GNP as revenues is going up, and going up significantly since 1995. Before 1995, the revenues of the Fortune 500 were tracking with the GNP, and ever since 1995, they've been rising exponentially, but their share of the taxes has been falling. And that's a divergence, and what this tax bill is going to do is continue that divergence. Bernie Sanders pointed out, quote from Bernie Sanders, in 1952, corporate America paid 32% of all federal taxes. Today, despite record-breaking profits, they pay less than 10%, and one out of four large profitable corporations pay nothing in federal income taxes. Reminds me of a great quote from the Turks and Caicos in the Worker trilogy. It's the second movie. In fact, when I was over in Amarillo, we watched it again. One guy says, in a few days, there's going to be this international colloquium. This is referring to Turks and Caicos. And this place will be crawling with rich and powerful people, the world's leading business people and politicians. And Johnny Warwick, or the MI5 analyst, says, what? 4 days in the sun? And they conclude the global recovery depends on their making more money. Pretty funny. Anyway, if you look at the sort of, this is sort of the leverage buyout of the whole economy by corporate America, and it's really being engineered by favorable government policies. Do I think it makes sense? No, but I understand why it's happening. So let me describe a little bit. If you're going to bring a lot of capital back into the country, a lot of it cash sitting in corporate accounts abroad. It's subject to U.S. taxation, but they don't have to pay taxes until they bring it back into this country. When they bring that money back, there's a great deal that's going to want to happen very, very quickly. And so if you are the administration and you want to engineer a very big capital move, there's a reason to do it basically negotiated with the centralized players. It's really speed and simplicity of operation. It's part of rebuilding a U.S. manufacturing and military base. Now, what it means is you're going to see a lot of money going into insourcing operations back into the U.S. or building out certain things like space or military. But a lot of this money is going to go for automation or acquisition or stock buyback. And what that means is it's not going to create a lot of jobs. It's going to be small business that creates jobs. And that's why someone like Senator Johnson is holding out to get a better treatment for small business. But a lot of this is a very big move of capital and the desire to rebuild North America and bring down the risk of being spread out globally in a way that I think the military is uncomfortable with. But there's every indication that whatever this is, you know, however this money is going to be reinvested in, it's going to exacerbate the tendencies of inequality. Now, what happens when the corporate infrastructure and the Republicans lock in what they want? This is my chief concern because I've seen it happen in Washington before. It reminds me of the scene in the Tomb Raider when Lara Croft says, well, I guess they got what they're coming for. Once they lock in a permanent reduction in the corporate rate, they're, you know, you're going to see, and they swing this money back in the country, you're going to see a group of people who want to move really, really fast and are not concerned with the law and are not concerned with the niceties of the needs of many different people. So think of it this way. Once you've locked in the corporate rate, now you can turn to abrogating the liabilities in 2.0 because the money's been moved over to 3.0. And now you can move the money that's been stockpiled abroad back into the United States without having to basically put it back into 2.0. You can keep it, the vast majority of it, over in 3.0. And so now you turn to whittling away at the liabilities in 2.0 that you don't have the money to fund. So my concern is some of the things that are going to happen are we're going to start seeing an attack on entitlements. So think of this as lowering the boom after tax reform. And the other thing is the 2018 election. So I think if they lower the boom, it's going to start next year, but it's going to get really aggressive after the election. So 2019. Issue number one is a race war. We see Trump, not a big headline, saying that they want to target welfare. I expect them to start cutting both administration and Congress welfare and food stamps. And part of this is going to be encouraging a divide and conquer. So you'll see things like Bitcoin and Soros money going to groups like Black Lives Matter. And you're going to see the drug gangs used in interesting ways. It's one of the reasons I've never carried. I have guns at home, but I haven't carried them. I'm starting to consider seriously carrying them. And of course, I've talked a lot about the Kingsman technology and my concern about weaponizing the population. But I think, you know, divide and conquer is the game. And I'm very concerned about what could happen if you get a big corporate tax cut and then follow it up by targeting welfare and food stamp programs. I live in a state where more than 25% of the people are on food stamps, so that's going to be very painful. The second attack, so number one is a race war. Number two is generation war. The older generation has a lot of knowledge of history. They have a lot of law. They have a lot of experience. They know a lot about survival skills, and you want to make sure that they don't teach all of that to the younger generation. So you want to have a divide and conquer between generations. So, you know, sort of expect a war on the elderly. And it's not just the poor elderly, it's all elderly. And I would expect to see heavy programming on that because you want to keep the younger generations sort of cut off from their history and dumbed down. All of this is going to make it harder for the productive because they're really productive citizens, especially building small businesses. Divide and conquer just really make life more difficult for them. So the bottom line is corporations are going to make more money and carry less of a tax burden, and the middle class and individuals are going to have to pay for the externalities of corporations. It's not a pretty picture, but I certainly understand why a group of people who want to, who feel we're levered globally, we're stretched globally, and we need to pull back the horns and move back and rebuild North America. I see why they want to move as quickly as possible. And obviously, if you're a highly centralized system, this is how you do it. Again, Congress has just 2 weeks, in addition to finishing tax reform, to pass a short-term resolution. If they don't, then the government shuts down, which I think it would not be a great Christmas present for the country. But Ryan is insisted Thursday that lawmakers could pass a short-term resolution by the deadline on December 8th. So I expect them to do that. Yellen did her final testimony, and Jay Powell, the incoming chairman, did his confirmation testimony, and both indicated that we should expect a bump in interest rates in December. So I expect to see that. Special Prosecutor Mueller continues doing his fishing expedition. If you look at how far away from his original scope he's going, it's ridiculous. One of the things, there are lots of leaks about his investigation of Mike Flynn, the gentleman who was National Security Advisor for about 2 seconds. And it's so ridiculous and so ugly that I finally said, that's it. And I made a donation. Flynn has a legal fund and is trying to crowdfund for his expenses. I made a donation, and I would encourage you to do the same. I just think it's the situation is ridiculous. Mueller was basically appointed to look at whether or not the Russians had compromised the Trump campaign, and so far all we're doing is, trying to squeeze people and looking for a parking ticket anywhere. It's pretty ridiculous. The global 3.0 clearing out of the 2.0 people continues. There was a great cartoon that I've run twice now in the different wrap-ups talking about, the people you need to steal money in a financial coup d'etat. It's very different than the people you need to reinvest the money now that you've stolen it. And with all this money swinging back into the country, you need the people who are good at stealing money gone so that you have people who are good at reinvesting the money now that the money is yours. So, who you want running the money is very different when you're trying to steal it as opposed to when you're trying to grow it. And there's no doubt that the people who help steal all the money are very expensive and are older now, and you can replace them with much cheaper, much more controllable young people. A lot of the 2.0 people have goods on everybody and certainly have goods on the system. So clearing them out is good risk management before you bring in that money. Obviously, the number one technique being used is sexual harassment charges, and it's creating a lot of them in the entertainment industry and the media industry, which, of course, were big Clinton supporters. So now, Peggy Noonan wrote a great article and said this is happening because the press has figured out that the way to handle these is not to do a he said, she said, but get a bunch of, multiple victims and describe a pattern, and the pattern will speak to itself in the court of popular opinion. In my opinion, you're seeing a lot of women encouraged to come out and say these things. And of course, the more who do, the more, the easier it is for the next person to do it. So we're seeing a wave, and if you look at how bad things have been, particularly since the Clintons were in the White House, and sort of there was an encouragement with globalization, sort of an encouragement of this kind of behavior. So whether it was Clinton getting away with it in the White House or it being encouraged in a variety of forms, I think if you look at the number of people who've been attacked for sexual harassment, It's really the tip of the iceberg. This could go on. If somebody wanted to go on, if you look at what the facts are, this could go on for years. Now, there's more and more indication that the establishment has decided to throw the Clintons under the bus. More stories about dealings between the Clinton Foundation and the Russians today in the media. It would be very interesting if they decide to prosecute the Clintons for Russian dealing, because I suspect that the Clintons, there's a lot more dirt on the Clinton side than there is on the Trump side, certainly in the Trump campaign. So how badly they'll throw the Clintons under the bus yet, I don't know. I think there are a couple stories here. One is, I think the French are very angry about Libya. The French were the ones who published Donna Brazile's book. So, and they got burned very, very badly on Libya. I think you have a lot of Democratic donors who understand you need to get the Clintons out. You need a clean slate if you're going to work with something that can be successful in 2018 or 2020. I also think the Silicon Valley group have probably made a deal. I've spent a lot of time thinking about the California fires, which I don't believe were wild at all. I think it was arson. So I'm going to engage in a little high-octane speculation. Most big decisions in this country, in my experience, or many of them, are made at the Bohemian Grove. And I think when you came into the Grove meeting in July, there was a big sort of squabble between the factions who had backed Clinton for president and the factions who had backed Trump. And some deals were made to compromise and leave the Grove on the same page. One of those deals, I think, was if you take the group that backed Trump, which is military and intelligence oriented, and you take the leadership of Silicon Valley, which backed Clinton, I think the Silicon Valley leadership, and I would include the folks in Seattle as, you know, being part of that, because if you look at who really runs the top endowments and the venture capitalists, Fed member banks, the builders, real estate developers, you know, heavy connections to Silicon Valley North. I used to think of Seattle, but now I'm thinking of what's going to be built out around Santa Rosa, Silicon Valley North. I think a deal was made where Silicon Valley, if you're going to swing all this money in, they need to grow. And trying to fit anything else in between San Jose and San Francisco is too hard. And so if you take out a map and you say, okay, where can we get a couple hundred thousand acres fast? Going to the east of 101 around Santa Rosa, Petaluma makes perfect sense. So I think a deal was made to go along with clearing out the room for Silicon Valley North in exchange for keeping Trump, meaning really keeping the faction that had put Trump in power. At the same time, you know, they needed to get a little more professional. And so the part of the deal was that Kelly would go in as the chief of staff. Interestingly enough, since that time, what we see is big announcements about both the intelligence community building out their cloud with Amazon, but the big new ones is DOD is proposing doing a $5 billion deal to also start to put their cloud into Amazon. So now we're going to have DOD and 17 intelligence agencies in a cloud managed by Amazon. And also another article about that I posted about a major deal for Amazon running an e-commerce portal for a lot of the purchasing. So we're talking about just a switch out of the systems, which have traditionally been with the defense contractors who did a lot of the IT. So we're basically talking about a big move out of Lockheed Martin, Dyncore and those folks into Amazon and much more Silicon Valley. So it looks like a whole series of deals were made to kind of get over the election and integrate and move forward. And it's all part of keeping Trump. So I think there's, if you look at now what's going down, I think there's very little chance that whatever Mueller's up to, it's going to do anything to seriously mess with Trump. But I think the deal's been made anyway. And I would say that it certainly wasn't good for the citizens of Santa Rosa. But one of the things you see with the speed at which they're moving, either on the corporate taxes or whatever happened north of San Francisco with the fires, I think the bottom line is invisible weapon and surveillance has blown a very major hole through international and domestic law. And now that you have David Rockefeller and the older generation retiring, the 3.0 crowd intends to move really fast. And this is what happens when you get a bunch of adolescent techies becoming billionaires. They have absolutely no respect for any of these laws. They see it as an irritating thing that doesn't involve them. It's quite remarkable. And now they seem to have gotten the military to go along with them, so not a pretty picture. A couple of other stories I want to point out that I think are important. Merkel is still struggling to build a coalition, and it just underscores how hard it is in this day and age. I think there are just too many lies and too little transparency, and it makes it extremely difficult to build effective coalitions. It's certainly what we're seeing in Washington. And what Merkel is dealing with, May also in London is said to be close to a Brexit deal. And no doubt this has been incredibly difficult. Meantime, we see Jeremy Corbyn coming, really rising in the polls. And so great frustration there. Bitcoin this week topped 10,000, although it flash crashed down to 8,500 afterwards. And I haven't checked where it is today. As I said, when we did the Bitcoin up, I think it can go much, much higher. We see the IRS win its case against Coinbase demanding of all sorts of data from one of the big Bitcoin exchange. As I said before, when we published our special report, Salera Report on Taxation of Cryptocurrencies, watch out for enforcement on taxes and currency transaction reports. If you're trading cryptocurrencies, please read that special report. You need to understand what the laws and regulations are. And I assure you that I have every reason to believe, based on all my due diligence, that the U.S. intelligence agencies have a record of almost every transaction, if not every transaction. So, you know, this is a way of creating massive the possibility of massive enforcement actions on a lot of people. So you want to be really careful on this one. Do not break the law. Underscore, beware the enforcement trap. Everyone is so taken with tax reform, they're not noticing gun legislation just made it out of the House Judiciary. This is in response to, or using Las Vegas as an excuse. I've called my senators and said, please don't pass this. And I tried to call my congressman. At 5:45 today, their voicemail was full, which will show you how much screaming is happening. Putin and Assad met the other, not this week, last week. And it's clear Syria is stabilizing with the help of the Russians. And despite all the screaming coming from a variety of U.S. allies in the current U.S. leadership. I'm clear that the U.S. does not want to go to war with Iran. Now, let's see what happens after the Saudi purge settles out. We'll talk a lot more about that with the Saker when he joins us in the new year. He's been writing a lot about it, and it's clear that things are evolving very much in the Middle East. It's a good sign Trump is in Asia, or just got back from Asia. The more he spends time in Asia, he'll see why it's better to invest in growth instead of squabbles. And we've certainly sunk enough time and money into the Middle East, and that needs to, we need to not let that become a sinkhole. North Korea, many headlines on North Korea. I think the question is if North Korea really does become serious. I don't see it as being serious yet. But if certainly a lot of posturing, the danger or the issue is if we really are going to deal with it, we're going to have to make clear that we have much more powerful weapons than nuclear bombs. Mattis seems to want to do everything you can to not show that hand. But again, if we do have to show that hand, then it's going to be ugly. And the question is, I don't think anybody wants to tip their hand publicly that they have more powerful weapons than nuclear bombs. But if they do, then they're going to want full support of the international community to allow them to do what they're going to do, which is going to be particularly ugly. Russia has announced that they're going to start a new internet for the BRIC nations. That's very smart, and it's the logical step, particularly now that the U.S. is backing down on net neutrality. The administration is expected to finalize a net neutrality plan. There's been lots of squabbling about it. Even when it goes into effect, then it's going to go into the courts. Interestingly, Jerry Corsi for InfoWars came out with a long piece saying progressives were stupid to try and demand net neutrality. The market could figure this all out. I think Corsi's absolutely naive. He's used to all sorts of freedoms that he's enjoyed, not understanding that there is no market. In fact, if there is a market, the only market will be Putin starting an internet for the BRICS, and we'll all have to get on it. But, you know, you're talking about in the telecom industry, in the cable industry, you're talking about a whole series of different monopolists and no real government intervention or prevention. And the idea of censorship running through a couple of the corporations who are going to control is a very unpleasant picture. We have a new food for the soul. It comes out twice a month, and there's a new really good one called Skyladder Da Vinci and Collecting Modern Art, and you're going to get introduced to a new artist who's like nothing you've ever seen. Anyway, I love those columns. We'll have a new one out next week. Our hero this week is David Talbot, who is the remarkable journalist who wrote The Devil's Chessboard, and I think truly solved the story of who assassinated Kennedy and how the conspiracy worked. He had a stroke earlier this month on November 17th, and I assure you David Talbot is too healthy and too young to have a stroke, so I am very concerned that the release of the documents, the JFK documents, put pressure on somebody to do some funny business. I don't know that. I'm just very suspicious. I think every document that gets released by the government on the JFK assassination is going to do nothing but confirm David's story, because he completely nailed it. There's a GoFundMe campaign to help contribute to his costs and support of his family while he's recuperating, and Solari's donated, and I would encourage you to donate. I can't think of a more worthy cause. And if you haven't bought The Devil's Chessboard, every thinking man's library should have a copy of The Devil's Chessboard. It's a magnificent book. You have to get all the way through to the end. It's very elegantly, momentum builds throughout the book. It's quite remarkable. And there's a great interview with him on the Solari Report. So David Talbot, I recommend that GoFundMe campaign to you. I'm sure his family would appreciate all the help they can get, particularly at Christmas time. I also did a book review of The Crypto Terrestrials by Mac Tunis, who's a interesting blogger and author and researcher. And it's the book is a very interesting thesis that argues that Earth is really governed by a separate species who lives here and stays invisible. They're much smaller in number than we are. And there's quite a lot about it that resonates. One of the reasons I read it was he died of a heart attack in his sleep when he was 34. I always make it my business, if somebody doing something very interesting dies under suspicious causes, I like to know what they were up to. And then finally, I put up a piece on the Gonzalez Foundation is now up and running in honor of Dr. Nicholas Gonzalez, who also died unexpectedly I think it was last year, and the foundation is publishing all of his work on the Gonzales Protocol and making sure that that protocol gets known and understood, and doctors can be trained in it. Anyway, that's also a wonderful cause that I would recommend to you, and you can find more about it up at Soleri.com. And let's go to the movies. I wanted to review Dark Tower, which is a new action movie that explores interdimensional realities of good and evil. I can't say it's a particularly good movie. It's kind of a B-grade action movie. It has some very good scenes and some very good moments, but it's the kind of thing that I plow through the Wall Street Journal while I'm watching it. I thought it was, what was interesting about it was that there was this kind of very open and serious exploration of good and evil and sort of our interdimensional realities and parallel realities. And I bring it up because when morphogenic fields or human fields are stable, and we have a strong culture and they're stable, they protect us from interdimensional forces. And when change comes and fields are torn apart, then people are left adrift and they are much more exposed to the interdimensional forces, particularly those of evil. And it's very important. It's one of the reasons I talk so much about discerning, being careful about who you invite into your life. In a stable country, stable economy, stable culture, many people haven't worried about it. Now that it's not stable, you have to be exceptionally careful. And it's funny, one of my favorite scriptures says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And many people think that means, oh, it means you're supposed to be afraid of, you know, this great divine father. No, I think it means fear of living without the covering that the light brings. And so if you know how wonderful it is to have that covering and that love, operating without it is devastating. And of course, that can be what happens when you get yourself crosswise with interdimensional forces. It's one of the reasons we wrote and keep promoting my article, Coming Clean. And also wanted to, because of the interdimensional forces, I wanted to bring up an outstanding article that was in The Present Age, which they gave us permission to republish this week. It's called Destiny in the Process of Dying. And I have to tell you, it's remarkable. And it's certainly the doctor's description very much fits with experiences I've had when I've been with people and sort of worked through with them the process of their passing over. And it speaks a lot about the interdimensional forces at work. So I would encourage you to read that also. Our interview this week is Joe Klein. I wanted to get Joe back on because I think there is an incredible wall we're about to hit in the healthcare industry. And in all of Joe's books, she writes very elegantly about the simple math of how many people, how many facilities, what are the economics, what are the demographics. She always does a great job, and I wanted her, she's got a new book on healthcare literacy, and I wanted her to come on and talk about this challenge. And I'm really trying to inspire everyone to become their own doctor. We each have to take responsibility for our health. It's not to say that we can't use healthcare practitioners, but we really have to, think of it this way. If you look at what's coming, there really is a tsunami coming, and we really have to do everything we can to take responsibility and know how to navigate the system. I keep saying that. Sometimes I think I'm talking to myself because there's always to do more. But the one thing, I don't encourage people to become preppers in general, but certainly I encourage everyone to be prepared for, you know, a 1 to 3 month hiccup or disaster. But I do feel every one of us is going to have to become a healthcare prepper. And so this is the area where you really want to prep and you really have to prep. I don't, no matter how many resources you have at your command. This is going to be a very tricky issue for many, many people. So it's a much longer conversation, and that's why I had Joe on. We just talked with Laura Thompson about it not that long ago. Anyway, please become a healthcare prepper. It really is the matter of life and death. It's a very complicated system that we're facing certently in the Western healthcare system, and there are many great new innovations and things going on in natural healthcare, but it's very complex. There's a lot to get your mind around, and it's changing every day. Okay, ask Catherine. A lot of questions. Hi, Catherine. I hope you can play the audio of Donna Brazile from her book signing in New Orleans on the 18th. It's a very interesting talk. Hearing her there and reading her book, I have become a great admirer. She told me that she does not believe that Seth Rich was killed during a robbery attempt. She did not say who she believes is responsible for the murder, but she obviously was deeply affected by it. So here's my response. I listened to the audio, and I thank you for sending. I will leave you to admire Donna Brazile. I'm glad she wrote the book. In my opinion, she rose to power like a lot of well-educated African Americans on a sea of affirmative action money and programs while helping provide the air cover for the Clintons and the Democrats to engineer drugs into black communities, private prisons, housing bubbles, more subsidy from government to big corporations and central control. So there's a new class of highly subsidized African Americans who delighted to profit from the genocide of their own people. I have little use for them. I was having dead animals left on my doorstep, trucks running me off the road, people breaking into my house, tapping my phone, and using electromagnetic weapons, trying to stop me from warning people and stopping that corruption and protecting innocent people from being rounded up for and put into private prisons. Please read slave labor camps, while trying to create legitimate jobs in those neighborhoods while she was getting rich helping Clinton and Gore engineer all the things I was trying to stop. At some point, you have to stop admiring criminals and start holding public officials accountable for their actual actions. We hate the housing bubble and narcotics trafficking and mind control technology and slave labor camps, but we seem to love the people who engineer them and market them. And I'm absolutely fed up with it. Next question. What is the chance that Uranium One is a Putin sting on Hillary? I think it's highly unlikely. Putin was just doing what, and the Russians were doing what every other leader was doing, was they were engineering, they were using the U.S. corruption to improve their ownership and position and commodities in a variety of different businesses. That's what everyone playing in the pay-for-play network that the Clinton Foundation was running was doing. Dear Catherine, whatever you do, don't repeat, don't waste your time on the Kingsman sequel compared to the previous film. It's an unwatchable, unholy, awful mess, and they go on. I've promised several clients that I would see it, but I haven't yet. It came out for streaming 2 days ago, so I will see it soon, but I'll make sure I'm reading more magazines and newspapers while I'm scanning it. Next question. Do you know who got Gaddafi's gold? No. I assume it was split up among the U.S. and the allies that supported the operation, although they could have had a side deal to take care of their liabilities with other people. So if U.S. owed gold back to the Germans, this could be how they got it. But my guess is the French are mad about the price they paid. It's if you integrate the cost of the immigration and branding problems that they've had as a result of this operation, it's probably the highest price per ounce the French have ever paid for gold. I will say this. The only thing I've ever agreed with Tom Friedman on is that the Libyan invasion uncorked Africa. It really has, and if it hadn't been for that operation, France would not be struggling with the number of immigrants that they're struggling with. One of the greatest humanitarian tragedies I've seen in my lifetime is taking the richest country in Africa and simply destroying it. And that's really what you need to subsidize the unproductive, but unproductive who have powerful weapons. And that's what it looks like. Hi, Catherine. Dr. Laura Presley was a candidate for Austin City Council in Texas in 2014. She currently has a suit against the state of Texas for election fraud. Sophia Smallstrom did a wonderful interview with her a couple of months ago, this election fraud case is a landmark case which is likely to have national ramifications if Dr. Presley wins. It's currently set to be heard in the Texas Supreme Court, and the Texas Attorney General has filed an amicus brief. The values that Dr. Presley advocates are very much in line with the concepts of the model that small town espouses. Thank you. I am planning to invite Dr. Presley in 2018. Our first slots are open in February, so I'm absolutely planning. It's quite remarkable what she's doing. Catherine, thank you for another fantastic interview with Richard Dolan. Your contrasting approaches to the search for truth makes for a deep and complimentary analysis. I was surprised, though, that you both did not mention the recent massive number of sealed indictments that have been issued and what this possibly meant. We didn't comment because they're under sale. We don't know what's in them. No one else does except the related prosecutors and grand juries. My guess, if I had to guess, my guess is that they're, if you look at sort of who won the election and now that they're swinging the money in, that there are many, many people in the grassroots in the, in sort of the Bush-Clinton drug cartels, including, that's including the Mexican drug cartels, operating in this country that need to be retired. Again, if the financial coup is over and the leadership and personnel you need to engineer the theft is different, you're going to insource a lot of that and bring it back into the country, then those corporations are going to need a safer environment in some of the places you're operating. And so a lot of the sort of messy games that that group was playing need to go. Now, there's a lot of sort of covert gossip about what's in those indictments and why they're happening. And I consider all of that gossip a complete waste of time. It's either hope porn that says, oh, the good guys are coming, the good guys are coming. Or fear porn that says the end is coming, the end is coming. The end is not coming, but your end will come if you don't stop wasting your time on fear porn and hope porn. So, one of the people you mentioned was Steele. I would say that Steele is not a particularly good source. You have excellent CIA officers who've retired who speak out, like Ray McGovern and Kevin Shipp, and NSA employees, Bill Binney, who we've had on the Salieri Report, Tom Drake, Kirk Wiebe. There are lots of excellent people, and I would really stick with the with those people and not spend a lot of time on covert gossip. Hi, Catherine. I hope you're having a blessed Thanksgiving with loved ones. I have a couple of questions, but first I wanted to thank you for sharing Richard Nolan's series on false flags. I've watched the entire series and shared it with a couple of friends. It's extremely well done and presentable to others. Everyone that I've shared it with has received it well and has good things to say about it and Dolan. I look forward to listening to your interview with Dolan when it's released. They then asked me about something called multiple wave oscillators and one product at biocharger.com. I don't know anything about them. I use a Quantron resonance system, which I have used for years. I'm also looking at a new system, thinking I'm planning on getting it as soon as I have time to focus on it, called Pulsed Harmonics, which comes very, very highly recommended. But I don't know the ones you're mentioning. I do think those systems can be very, very helpful. I would say this, if you haven't watched The Truth About Cancer, I would suggest you and your mom might find that very useful. I'm a great believer in trying things. Also, I heard you mention several times now that you believe there's a push to have churches replace their wooden doors with glass or metal. Can you explain this, why this is and why you are against it? Does it have to do with EMFs or it's more a spiritual thing? I think the technology makes it much easier to both listen in on what's going on inside the church, but also introduce entrainment and mind control. So I would do everything in the building of a church to try and protect against that technology. If you drive around and look at the big corporate headquarters for sort of the big defense contractors, what you can see is it's clear they're building their buildings to try and keep all that stuff out. Next question. Michael Sala was conspicuously absent at the Secret Space Conference. Is he persona non grata? I would recommend you see Richard Dolan's letter written this summer called On Corey, Andrew and the Whistleblowers. It's basically discussing the problem of disinformation and the nature of Corey Good's. Corey Good, there's a lot of momentum going to seriously study the secret space program. The whole momentum got blown out of the water by what I consider to be a serious disinformation effort to that turned the whole thing into entertainment as opposed to serious research. Michael Sala does some very good research, but in my opinion, he bought into a pig in a poke with Corey Good. Good poured a lot of goo into the UFO space. It's like pouring goo into a Ferrari machinery. Now a guy named Tom DeLay is pouring even more goo now that Good's kind of run is over. Richard's letter, which I strongly recommend you read and which is linked up on the website, is a very fine description about why that is all very destructive. Anyway, I'm assuming Sala was not invited because when the 2015 secret space program came around, he was very much involved with the Corey Good effort. And as Richard very elegantly describes in the letter, he just bought into a whole bunch of stuff that didn't belong in the kind of serious effort that was going on at Secret Space Program 2014 and 2015. And it was amazing in both of those efforts, particularly 2014. We really got a lot of momentum got going, and it was too bad that the sort of the good disinformation came along. Hi, Catherine. Have you seen this? Know of anyone who can corroborate what's being claimed? It's the story of U.S. Marines storming CIA headquarters. I know of no cooperation. I've seen the rumor bounced around, and I posted it under wildcards because I thought it was interesting that it was bouncing around. Interestingly enough, right after it came out, InfoWars put up the remarkable video of the retired fire captain in Northern California explaining why these were not natural fires. And interestingly enough, the next day he put it up, then he took it down, and it's completely wiped out from his website, which I thought was very interesting. I do think there are a lot of struggles between the DOD and the intelligence agencies. And you'll hear more about that if you listen to the two interviews I did with Dolan on the deep state and the U.S. budget. We're trying to run two civilizations out of one budget and trying to pretend that one of the civilization does not exist, and that's damn near impossible. And I think there's no doubt in my mind the military's power is rising relative to the CIA. You have a very strong Secretary of Defense, and you've got a Marine General who is now running the White House, and I suspect with the full support of all factions at the Bohemian Grove. And if you look at that formula, it says again to me what I've been saying since the election, which is this is a group of people responsible for global military operations and therefore the existence of the reserve currency, who understand that they need to radically reduce risk and rebuild capacity. It's not an easy job, particularly when you just see what happened in Northern California. Next question. There's a woman named Kate Noble running for mayor of Santa Fe next March. I may want to donate a Solari subscription to her if she shows any interest. I still believe New Mexico corruption is a tradition that rules. You and Saker may be interested. I saw 48-minute presentation of Stephen Gowan's book, Washington's Long War in Syria, that may interest you in Saker. I'll take a look. At the very end, he quoted Norman Bethune's article Wounds, written in 1939. I read it and converted to a PDF attached here. Oh, it's very beautiful. I posted it. Solari Report. The last two sentences read, such men as these must perish if the human race is to continue. There can be no permanent peace in the world while they live. Such an organization of human society as permits them to exist must be abolished. Beautiful. If you've not read my review of Political Ponerology of the book, you might be interested in it. It describes the fact that approximately 5% of the population, their theory is, are basically born psychopaths and the rest of us, and they're very good at finding each other and organizing to use political mechanisms to control. And again, if you look at what happened in Northern California, they clearly walk among us. This is what I'm getting from you and Saker and a number of his peers this past year. Is this simply history repeating itself, or are we at crossroads? Why is humanity at stake? Humanity is at stake because of AI and robotics and related weaponry. If you didn't see the video I posted called Slaughterbots on autonomous weapons, I think I posted about 2 weeks ago, I strongly recommend it. And then you add to that invisible weaponry that can be used to manipulate weather, steer hurricanes, monsoons, and create tsunamis, or a combination of GMOs, vaccines, and nanobots and nanoparticles in the global spraying that is literally re-engineering our DNA. So we're seeing a form of technological innovation which literally could wipe out or permanently alter humanity in a very dangerous way. And if you look at how that weaponry is now being applied by the leadership, it's creating enormous inequality and appears to be creating an infertile population. So I think the future of humanity is very much in question. Catherine, great interview with Harry on gun rights for superlative firearm training. I strongly recommend Aegis Academy in Southern California. The instructors are seasoned Navy SEALs, Marines. I thank you for that tip. I need more training. As I said, I'm going to start carrying regularly, particularly around Tennessee. And so I'm also looking to get a separate gun for carrying. So I've gotten some good advice from several subscribers, and I thank you. Two Google-related questions. Besides DuckDuckGo, in place of Google search engine, what are your thoughts on Firefox? Firefox is my main browser. As far as I know, they don't have a search engine. They link into a variety of different search engines. I use DuckGo. Sometimes I'll use Bing. Very occasionally, a couple times a day max, I'll have a search that really needs to dig down, and I will go back to Google because I do think it performs the best. But DuckDuckGo is my main one. I will also use this browser, Safari and Brave. I'm still trying to test Brave, which is being led by the guy who I believe led Firefox. What do you recommend to replace Gmail? I would check out StartMail and ProtonMail. I use StartMail as well as the Solari mail server with Thunderbird software. And then you continue, got to get away from Google. Catherine, next question. Wonderful article filled my soul on the loss of traditional agriculture and what it means to be an environmentalist, a conservative perspective. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving and a grateful blessing as a subscriber. Thanks, and thanks everyone for all your good links. We're getting a lot of great ones posted at subscriber input. Catherine, happy Thanksgiving. I'm forwarding this to you because the subject is concerning, to say the least. I also follow Martin Armstrong, and as models are showing, we are heading into a mini ice age, which appears to say food shortages should be front and center. How will this affect markets, and what is your opinion of how we survive the cycle? You're an amazing person. I thank God I found you. I don't know if it's true or not. So much weather manipulation is going on that it's very hard to say where this is going to go. Clearly, the leadership is going underground in a major way for some reason. If you haven't read a post that I wrote called This Does Not Change Everything, it's a review of Naomi Klein's book, This Does Change Everything. I would strongly recommend that for my views on this point. I do think food has been front and center globally. A lot of the riots we've seen around the world were actually food riots, although the media doesn't communicate them. If you look at the 2016 annual wrap-up we published in January, it was on the global harvest and food, and that's because I think food will be front and center. There's pressure on the dollar, which means food prices are going to rise. There's more automation, which means falling income, and the combination is a real squeeze on the average consumer by food costs. And I think food availability, particularly high quality food, will be front and center in the developed world as well. So I agree with you that food is going to become more and more important. If you haven't read Global Harvest, I would strongly recommend it. And then you sent something from Geoengineering Alert. Thank you for that. Then I got a very long email about gang stalking. It's in the notes, and I'm not going to read the whole thing here, but one of the things they said was, I'm new to the whole targeted individual scene. This is individuals targeted by electronic harassment and abuse, and even electronic torture. I'm new to the whole targeted individual scene, and I'm still trying to come up to speed on what can help. If it weren't for the Slayer website, I would be totally in the dark about the whole targeting phenomenon and the extent of what's possible with mind control. But because I had seen articles about it at Slayer, I realized what was happening and was able to act sooner rather than later to protect myself. That's very good news. I think it's important that we all understand this stuff exists and, you know, that there are ways to understand and deal with it if it happens to you. They end by saying, I really hope someone like Melissa and Aaron Dykes can delve deep into this area of hive mind so that we can learn how to protect ourselves from it. I think their work is so tremendous, and I think ultimately that's where it's going to lead. It's going to lead to helping us figure out how to protect ourselves. So the more we talk about this, the better. Next question. I just listened to Control 101. Control 101 was the theme of the third quarter wrap-up. When will we get a Salieri report or book on growing up in a rough neighborhood, which was clearly preparation for what was to come, and get the details of how you and God teamed up to fight the evil of the litigation? We understand if you are reluctant to reveal such intimate details, but they are an essential part of the message you appear to have been born to deliver. You're the only public person who's making the connection between the material and the divine in quite this way, and the story needs to be told. I've made several efforts to tell it. We have two Salieri reports on spiritual warfare and one called The Power of It with John Rappaport, where I tell pieces, and I've written some commentaries. So I kind of feel like I've told it, but I will think about the best way to do that. I certainly tried to do a great deal of it in Control 101, and so that's a good step forward, and I'll think more about it. Dear Catherine, I was catching up on the Salieri reports. Just listen to the third quarter. Wait a minute. Third quarter wrap-up part one. I was surprised what I thought were your positive comments on Schauble. That's the German finance minister who just left to be president of the Bundestag. And wonder if you read the article in The Guardian back in 2015. Do you think it's historically incorrect? The picture I get of him from it is a man to be feared, not respected. There are others who have written quite favorably of him, but his push for privatization of Greek assets seems to coincide with the historical information on him in The Guardian article. Do I misinterpret your comments? I would strongly recommend that you read my review of the Greek finance minister's Adult in the Room, and then I would recommend that you read the book. And it gives a very interesting picture of Schauble. He's certainly been someone who is the nuts and bolts person sitting, you know, between a corporate infrastructure that wants centralization and trying to deal with sort of the invasion and conquering of Southern Europe. But he's an exceptionally smart man and someone who's struggling to be an impossible situation. And this gets back to the problem. If you're the finance guy, of how you deal with the fact that we are financing two civilizations out of one budget and everything's supposed to be secret. And if you look at the situation he's struggling with, once in a while, he'll pop out with some of the most insightful comments I've ever heard. I keep quoting his comment in Beijing and in I think it was January or February of 2016 when he said, the debt growth model is over. There are no reforms now that are not real reforms. One of the most intelligent comments on what was going on globally, and I think very few people picked up on it, but I've maybe quoted it 1,000 times since then. I thought it was brilliant, insightful. He's clearly, in terms of nuts and bolts, a highly competent and capable individual, and who's been in a very difficult position for a long, long time. Do I approve of sort of the austerity program that's been visited on Southern Europe? No. But I also think Schäuble is a very intelligent person who at the end showed his humanity, and is probably why Merkel booted him out. It wouldn't surprise me if the book Adults in the Room cost him his job. In closing, next week, very appropriate topic, especially if the Republicans manage to pass the tax bill by Monday. December 7th, we have year-end tax planning 2017 with Patty Kemmerer, and if we have a final bill, hopefully we can talk a little bit about that as well. December 14th, an amazing, amazing interview. You have to hear it. It's so good. Harry Blaser was at the Weston Price conference and caught up with Sally Fallon, who has run the Weston Price Foundation, founded it and run it for years. It's called Nurturing Traditions with Sally Fallon. It's a fabulous interview, and she's an amazing person. The Weston Price Network is an amazing network, and it's just a very delicious interview. Then December 21st, we start our Best of the Best. We're going to have a wrap-up of wrap-ups. We revisit all the wrap-ups, and then December 28th, Best of the Salier Report, Enforce the Constitution. So it's a great lineup for December. So until next week with Patty Kemmerer and your year-end tax planning, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.